Scottish borders from a little village not far from Edinburgh, and I'm going to start with a poem that was from my childhood. This is my first poetry collection, which is kind of autobiographical and falls into four parts. The first section is childhood, and then the second section is adulthood, and the third one is kind of broadly politics and religion, and then the last one is kind of art and immortality or something like that. So this is the first one from the childhood section. Eden. Bees cruised on a breathless noon. Cabbage-white butterflies flickered in the lane. Our doll's china tea set cracked the silence as we crept over the neighbor's dike, spread a picnic under the rhubarb, and stripped to our pink Scots skin. We screeched and whooped among the tall red stalks, striped by their shadows in war paint glow, squealed at the slap of leafy parasols, shrieked as caterpillars fell to our knees from pinholes of light where they grazed. Heels and stick click down the path, fingernail flames rip through leaves. Get out of my garden, you dirty, dirty girls. The next one is about it's the my experience of our first child, who died at 10 days old. Oh. Co-op funeral parlour. My heart stops at the waxed apple cheeks, plump and impossibly polished. Your head in my palm yesterday, skull barely masked by paper skin, you are undeniably mine. An imposter lies in this small white box we ordered, a collector's doll, lace-framed face mounted on a slice of shop window silk. I would strip the pinned folds, find the miracle of your miniature hands, blood cooled to blue beneath each nail, but a tail of brown thread, carelessly trimmed, curls below the jaw's angle, like a worm emerging from puckered skin. I draw back, let panic drain, search for signs of you, and detect at last the downturn of your top lip, my mouth's copy, under a lipstick blur. Two horses against a hill. Two horses against a hill, shoulder to shoulder. One faces east, the other west. And I think of us, how we can be, sometimes at our best, opposites, yet close enough to cradle each other's different worlds in a wide arc of peripheral vision. Which was difficult news, and it's about my mother-in-law who had died, and she was from the Isle of Skye, a crofter. How to tell him on receiving news of my mother-in-law's death. I replace the phone on its cradle, the news resting in my ear. how to bring it to my mouth. Be midwife to words that will cut the cord of their braided years. How to tell him? He looks up from his paper like a child over a garden hedge, her fond and only prodigal. I can hear the clock on her mantelpiece, 200 miles away, its tick a pulse to the music of her days, the hens muffled clucking at her kitchen door, the hot water tanks bubble and slurp as the peaked blaze sears the back boiler, the ferries boom at the pier head, the winds whine up the Croft Brae. She's still alive until I tell him. Sending eggs next week, as usual, swaddling each fragile oval in the Press and Journal's folds. Tomorrow's pot roast is on the stove, homage to the Sabbath, when, duty-bound, she'll take her ease. And she's skinning golden wonders, scooping salt herring from a plastic pail, their scaled bellies a rainbow in her palm. Until I tell him. That was true. My mother-in-law used to send us eggs, fresh eggs, not boiled, in the post, wrapped in newspaper, and they would always arrive completely intact. It was miraculous. My second poetry collection, which is going to be published next spring, is all about Scottish women from BC to the 21st century. And they're all in monologue form, either in the voice of the woman herself, or in the voice of someone who knew her, or in the voice of her achievement or creation or discovery. So I thought I'd maybe throw a bit of Scots at you, because I write quite a lot in Scots language, which I love. I was brought up in a village in the Borders where I used to hear Scots all about me. Sadly, not so much nowadays. It's the kind of Scots, I suppose, that Burns was writing in. And this one is about a zoologist and geologist who was, she was an amazing woman. She was a curator of Marischal College Museum, Aberdeen, and Elgin Museum, writer of scientific articles. So this one is a kind of conceit, this poem, because it's in the voice of somebody I've made up, who's like a granny of a girl who's at college, Susie. And Susie's come in with some news about this woman, Anna Buchan, who has died. And it's based on something I found out about her, which was her obituary. So it's called Anna Buchan's Obituary. Yon woman was something else. I mean, the headline they printed in the paper yestreen when she'd pecked her last didn't give us a clue. My granddaughter bringed in for the college. She's aye foo of all kind of by-orner facts that leave me a hint, particular new my mindin's tint. Apparently, says Susie, yon woman kent all about yerd, and what's buried in it, fossils like the Rigbane or Fint dump to a bird, and all kind of gear, quakes, ashets, binds for lang syne. She howked out a wheen of them atween the railway line and Elgin Road. Mind where the old clay pits yins were worked. My brother's bits are still clarted with on. And there's naething she didn't ken about lamps, tillies, cruises, like I used to burn Ben. Yin fae reed clay, says Susie, fae the Nile, thousands a year syne, fair fantouche in style. In Stoury museums, she'd scance and leaked ilka bit thing, nae matter whether talker or pauper or king. and she kenned all thing about thae mountains o' ice afore beasts were born, could look at a slice o' yird and gie its name, date and place. On our planet, she wasna just a pretty face. And here's Susie's pint. She's beelin' oor lass. This is the headline that cam to pass. Abin her obituary, the braw woman, bless her, widow of an Elgin hairdresser. And that's true, that was the obituary in the newspaper, probably the Press and Journal, about Anna Buchan, widow of an Elgin hairdresser. Okay, so this one is an astronomer. This is Wilhelmina Peyton Fleming, born in Dundee. So many amazing women came from Dundee, and I've been wondering why that might be the case. It is true that many women worked in the mills in Dundee because they were paid, in the jute mills, they were paid lower wages than the men, and the men were known as kettle boilers, which means that, you know, the people who were boiling the kettle at home. And I don't know whether that has kind of given Dundee some kind of, you know, something in the air that has made women, you know, given them some power. I don't know, but there's a lot of amazing women came from Dundee, and this is one of them. She was born in 1857 and died in Boston, the USA, in 1911. She was honorary member of the Royal Astronomical Society of London, honorary fellow in astronomy at Wellesley College, awarded the Guadalupe Almendaro Medal by the Astronomical Society of Mexico for her discovery of new stars. She discovered hundreds and hundreds of new stars. Although she discovered Horsehead Nebula, which is an amazing gaseous form, which is below Orion, the constellation. She was denied credit due to her name being eliminated from the list of astronomical discoveries at Harvard. So this is in the voice of Horsehead Nebula. Hmm. Horsehead Nebula speaks. There I am, bucking my head below Orion's belt, free rein in that constellation's fiery dust, riding the stellar waves for millennia, unnoticed till a woman with eyes like burning stars takes one look, has me harnessed, measured, catalogued, and tamed. I'm proud to be groomed with such exquisite care by one who can do it all. A maid she was at the professor's kitchen sink until he saw her quiet gift for seeing light with a precision that far outstripped his Harvard team of men. And then the men come in. I'm claimed as their discovery and named Grim Reaper, Black Knight of the chessboard, they say, failing to notice I'm a mare. They make me want to leap from this photographic plate, leave it miraculously blank, and take her with me, my lady of the stars, who found me first. We'd race the heavens together, gallop across light years, stream through Zeta's glittering rays bareback, all along the hunter's belt, from Mintaka to Alnitak. Century artist called Esther Ingalls, who was the daughter of Huguenot refugees. She came to live in Edinburgh, in Leith, when she was about three. And King James VI of Scotland, first of England, said that she was the most exquisite calligrapher and miniaturist, sort of portrait painter, in the realm. She died in poverty. but she painted these tiny, exquisite miniatures, so I thought it was appropriate to write for her in haiku form. She also made these exquisite little books that she embroidered with sea pearls, you know, freshwater pearls that she would probably have bought from travellers who were great freshwater fishers, fishermen of freshwater pearls. 9 haiku for Esther Ingalls. Goose and crow quills scratch a tiny patch of parchment, giving flight to words. I paint myself, not vanity, necessity. A lord may hire me. A ragged man sells seed pearls from a burn. I stitch them to books for kings. Honeysuckle scrolls, thistle spikes, and fleur-de-lis twine with damask rose. Like a butterfly, I inhale from harebell cups the tang of blue ink. I was King Jamie's most exquisite writer in this realm, now debt stalks. My constant husband, dear daughters and son, I fear my steady hand fails. From the Lord, goodness, from myself, nothing. Till death, I will chart his praise. All creation dwells in a leaf, bird, bloom, or word in my maker's book. I'll finish with a poem that goes with a film, which I think we're going to see later, by a wonderful filmmaker, poet, writer, Margaret Tate. She's becoming well known in Scotland, rightly so, because she has she was alive at the time of Hugh McDiarmid and that group of very famous Scottish writers. But she was kind of on the periphery, as most women were, women writers were at that time. She made many very beautiful experimental films, and one of them is called Portrait of Ga, and it's of her mother. The word Ga was Margaret Tate's family name. They all used it for grandmother, Ga. She was from Orkney, from the Orkney Isles, and her films are absolutely beautiful. So this is my film, my she called her films film poems. This is my poem film for Margaret Tate, and it's in the voice of Margaret, and she's making the film in this poem. Portrait of Ga. Mother, I need to get you in the can, I say. Your cheekbones cutting the light, hair flying loose from its pins, like stray wool on barbed wire. I know already what the soundtrack will be, a smoky flute breathing that ghost of a march you're conducting right now with a fag end. Your wry smile gives me the green light, the mouth's hallmark curve, your own mother in it, a glimmer of my ga, and her mother, your ga, Viking quines, their lineage folding back through time, beyond the rainbow on today's horizon. Invisible women in my wide angle frame, as you step away up the road's incline. And yet, there they are in the jaunt of you, that quiet defiance, happed in classic tweed, breaking loose from buttons in a careless dance. Cut to close up, a shadowed interior. My lens drinks the silver of your window-lit hair, then tilts down the neck's white flow, rests on the bray of your shoulder. Blue linen pleats, tailored with grace like the years you've gathered. There's so much to see and hear in you, so many layers, like the constantly shifting shells at Bay of Scale. A gurgling burn of wordplay in your eyes, on your tongue, your own kennings coined for grandbairn's delight, and always the skylark and wind in your hearing, even between four walls. Closer still, your thumbs and fingers unveil a boiled sweet. Slow pincer moves left and right and left. Life here has shown you ambrosia moments won't be hurried, till the cellophane bud blooms and you slip its nectar between your teeth. Wide shot, exterior, leaning into your spade, you turn the earth, garden blossoms wag in the breeze. The girl in you obliges by giving me a burl, then you settle into a sunlit book, ritual and rhythm in all your days, as they blow through each season, drawing to a close on this northern rim of the world.